This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio
Free
Radio.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to www.rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
If you ride a bike in most North American cities, you need nerves of steel. Even experienced city cyclists have their share of close calls as they compete with cars for space on the road. In fact, fear of getting hit by a car is one of the major deterrents for many would-be cyclists. The city of Vancouver knows this, and so separated bike lanes are springing up everywhere. But they often meet with opposition from small businesses who worry that bike lanes will cost them customers. Michael Anderson is co-author of a report called Protected Bike Lanes Mean Business. The report showcases interviews with 15 business people in five U.S. cities where bike lanes are expanding rapidly. Michael Anderson is staff writer for the People for Bikes Green Lane Project. He covers bike infrastructure trends around the U.S. and Canada. Michael Anderson joins me this morning from Portland, Oregon. Hello, Michael.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
It's our pleasure. I went on a vacation to Portland with my bike a couple of years ago, and I took a train from Vancouver, and I was totally struck by how drivers in Portland really seemed to notice me and my bike much more than in Vancouver. How did you guys get there?
Well, that's good to know. I actually took a vacation to Vancouver a couple of years ago, and I was really struck by how polite everybody was, except when they were driving, actually. I think that this is something we see. It's like the single most important and clearest trend in safety is not actually how good the bike infrastructure is. It's how many bikes are on the road. And that holds true throughout the world. The catch is, and the reason infrastructure is important is because you need the infrastructure. You need people to feel safe before they will actually get on the road with the bike to go somewhere. And it's the number of people doing that is the most important effect on how safe the streets are, actually for everybody, not just people biking.
Oh, that's a really interesting sort of line of consequences. So you make it safer, more people get out there, and then you make it safer in the bike lanes, and then it's safer everywhere.
Right, and you make it more comfortable. So I think there's an important distinction between comfort and safety as well. It's not that safety is bad, in the same way that, like, a restaurant doesn't want to, you know, it's not that not having food poisoning is unimportant. But that's not the only way to have a good restaurant. You need it to be a pleasant place to be, right? And so in the same way, to get people to actually use a bike lane, you need to have it be a comfortable place to be, the way that Vancouver's done a good job with, I think, with a lot of the new bike lanes.
Now, businesses say that they need the parking that bike lanes take away to attract customers. Is that, in fact, borne out by research?
I'll answer that by way of a little bit of a diversion, but it seems to me that I have owned a small business. My mom owned a small business. It totally makes sense. I think one thing that's important to remember is that, like, when you're owning a small business, so many things could go wrong at any time, and it is such a feat of endurance and luck and hard work to have a working small business that any changes are naturally going to introduce risk into the system. And it's completely rational for somebody who owns a small business to not want any more risk in the system than is necessary. So any change is always going to lead to risk. So I think as a society, we should respect that, and we should also be like, you know, as a collective, as governments or whatever, we should be obviously doing what we can not to introduce bad risks into the system for small businesses with no reason. That said, I think there is a lot of evidence that despite the completely natural tendency or, you know, impulse, reflex for folks who do own a small business or making it work to not want changes on the street outside, there's a lot of evidence that this is not a bad risk to take, and in fact, it's actually it's a useful change because it leads to the thing that the neighborhood really needs in the long run economically, which is to escape from dependence on space dedicated to car traffic. And ultimately, the problem with a shortage of parking is that you are dependent on the amount of space devoted to parking, and there's only so much space, especially in a city like Vancouver, that can be devoted to anything. And if we're putting it into parking, then we're using up that space. And we can't just continue to expand that forever. What bike lanes do, what other things like, you know, transit or, you know, increasing the number of people walking do, is they reduce the amount of space we need to devote to car parking, and therefore we reduce the dependence on car parking.
Now, I'm a cyclist, and I also drive. I'm in a car share here in Vancouver, and I kind of know how it's different to go shopping by bike and go shopping by car, but for people listening who maybe only do one or only do the other, how is it different?
I do most of my daily business on a bike here in Portland, and I would say that in my experience, this is borne out by the research, what being on a bike does is it increases the number of times you go to the same places. You have familiar routes. They're on the routes that you can get to easily, and they are generally close to you, and they are generally sort of welcoming of human beings, right? They're not necessarily buried in a parking lot somewhere. All of those are characteristics of generally locally owned businesses, and that behavior leads to this trend where you're more likely to patronize the same places over and over in smaller amounts. And that's actually exactly what the data shows. There have been studies showing the same thing in Toronto and Davis, in Wales, in Australia, in Portland, where people have done intercept surveys of people walking into stores and asked, like, how often do you come here? How much do you spend? It comes out that people arriving by bike are spending less per trip, but they're buying more. And so it comes out to exactly the same amount per month that people are spending by bike and by car. And the effect of that is that, you know, a person is a person. So what really matters to a store is the number of wallets per square foot of parking space that they are taking up. And it's obviously much more efficient for you to have more wallets in a series of bike parking spaces than to have one wallet in a single car parking space.
I wanted to ask you about something that I read in your report. You said there's a liquor store owner that you spoke with in Chicago who said something that caught my eye. He said that any small business owner should be pushing for something that brings traffic by at a slower rate. What exactly does he mean by that?
Yeah, actually, so I work on the internet. So I think about it sort of like in terms of the way we measure traffic. There are two common ways of measuring traffic. Back in about 10 years ago, everybody thought that page views was the most important way to measure traffic. And similarly, maybe about 40 years ago, everybody in North America thought that the number of eyeballs breezing past on the freeway was the most important, like, real estate that there was in retail. And the science has shown in both of those contexts that what matters more to the viability of a business is the probability that those eyeballs are going to linger, right? Or that those people are going to be moving past either virtually or physically at a speed where they can actually think about what they're passing. And as it happens, people on bikes, they can smell your pizza inside the building. They can see the people having a great time. They can hear the glasses clinking. And they're also can more easily stop and spend money. So I think that it just makes sense. And, of course, when they're going past on the bike, they're not making the noise and the sort of smell of cars coming past. So there's that benefit to the people sitting in the cafe, too. But in general, yeah, I think that the 694 Wine and Spirits fellow was responding to the fact that, yeah, of course, when people are coming past, you want it to be people coming past in a way that they're going to become potential customers, not in a way that they're just being momentarily exposed to your sign.
So there are statistics that show that cyclists spend as much or more money in a month than car owners if they frequent your store. There's this idea that if people slow down, that they'll actually come into your store more often. But yet, small business owners continue to be resistant to bike lanes. What do you think is the answer to convince people that it will actually be a benefit?
Yeah, and I guess I would dispute you a little bit just to say that not every small business owner are, but I think almost every time when you've got a parking lane being replaced by a bike lane, you get at least some small business owners, often many small business owners upset about that possibility, especially if Spring Lane is heavily used. So several things. One, like I said at the start, I think that as governments, we cannot expect consensus on every decision, and we shouldn't be harming people, but we also can't expect it would be irrational for people to support change when they've got a profitable business. So there's not a situation where we can sort of expect business owners to drive the need for some sort of change to the street. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be careful not to harm their businesses. That just means that we can't expect them politically to be the driving force. So that said, we should be making decisions that help both the business and the larger community. We should be weighing the benefits of a connected network of bike lanes throughout the city, which pays off only when we have a connected network throughout the city, against the benefits of preserving auto parking on the street in this one part of the district. One thing that happened in Montreal that was very useful about 10 years ago, the Boulevard de Maisonneuve, they installed a two-direction protected bike lane on one side of the street there, had to remove 300 parking spaces. And so what they did was they studied the total number of parking spaces within 200 meters of the project, both above ground, underground, in garages, on the street, so on. They found out that there were 11,000 parking spaces there, and they were just removing 300 of those, about 3% of the parking spaces. So even though there would be a story that half the parking spaces are being removed on this street, which is a big change, it really was a drop in the bucket compared to the amount of space there was for parking in the area, especially off the street in these garages that people are often not using fully in the first place. So once you get around the fact that it's just a small number, Montreal removed that lane of parking. I was there last year. It is a constant flow of people biking, driving, walking, et cetera, down the street, the thriving street. Once people see that happening, I think most people are like, okay, well, it's not that big a deal. I understand the context here. It seems like a bigger change than it really is.
Do you think part of the issue here is what you're saying about a network, that if you're just going street by street, then there isn't the big change, but once you start establishing a real network, then everybody can see the benefit?
Yeah, and so, I mean, there's the benefit to the business district itself of having bikes, people biking through there. And then there's the larger benefit to the city when people are going through that district. It, like with any network, the more destinations there are that are all linked together, the more valuable every point on that network becomes. So, yeah, I think that part of the reason that Vancouver has admirably been doing, in the last few years, a job of prioritizing a bunch of these key links is that they know that once it is connected into a full network, that will become a really large potential part of people's travel.
Well, it's been good to talk to you this morning, Michael, and I encourage people to seek out the report because there's some really interesting statistics in there and some gorgeous photographs of bike lanes.
Thanks very much.
I've been speaking with Michael Anderson. He's co-author of a report called Protected Bike Lanes Mean Business. Michael Anderson is staff writer for the People for Bikes Green Lane Project, covering bike infrastructure trends around the U.S. and Canada.